The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
I have been, honestly, never more, I think at the beginning of the Fukushima calamity, equaled the amount of energy I'm putting into this. On behalf of all of us, we're all, I mean, I'm learning like you are. This story is huge. There are a lot of conspiracy stories now about this coronavirus running around, and you really need to read them if you're interested. Put them aside, put them all in a basket, and let them sit there and simmer. Don't jump on anything yet. Bottom line is, it doesn't really matter. We are confronted with this virus no matter where it came from. Most important is that all of you, in whatever country you may be living in and listening right now, you need to prepare. This is apparently going to go worldwide. So you've got to start thinking about your family, your loved ones, yourself, and all the rest of it. Well, we'll talk more about that. We're going to do this tonight. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight. He'll be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and there's so much happening. We're going to do an hour and a half with my first guest, Dr. Bruce Cornett. Always great to talk to Bruce. And then Henry will come on in an hour and a half, and we'll begin to wade through the enormously important things that are coming at us right now. This is going to be a big one, so we will see. Now, as I think many of you know, whenever Bruce Cornett is on, it's always fun, fascinating, and sometimes downright phenomenal. He's a remarkable man, a scientist. He is a doctor and has experienced so many things. He is in Laughlin, Nevada now to speak at this giant UFO conference there at Laughlin, I guess right on the Colorado River. And that's coming up in a few days. But Bruce, are you there? Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can, Jeff. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you're very
really
welcome.
It's really amazing being on the Colorado River here and realizing just where that river has been coming down from the north through the Grand Canyon and all of that. It's quite amazing.
Uh-huh. It's a wonderful, wonderful river of life on the planet that is being tragically drained dry, and the further down you go, the more polluted it gets, but it's a beautiful river. I was at Laughlin, the conference, once many years ago, 20 years ago? I don't remember, but the hotel it was held in, when I went in the door, it was a smoking hotel. I could hardly breathe. I lasted 4 or 5 hours there and left. I couldn't take it. I assume the hotel you're in has smoke-free areas at least.
Yes, for the most part, there is no cloud of smoke in the casino area, even though there is the slight smell of cigar smoke, but that's it.
Yeah. Those are old-time 1930s and 40s movie props, cigars. But they do put off an aroma, as it were. I think Rush Limbaugh was an inveterate cigar smoker, so they're dangerous as well, even though you don't necessarily inhale them. The smoke is there, and it's abundantly available to your lungs. All right, enough of that. When I was there, whatever hotel this was, Bruce, it was fascinating because I went out on the balcony. They had like a balcony or a walkway right over the river. You look down at the water, you know, 10 feet below you. And I'm looking down at the water, and I kid you not, two beavers came swimming by right below me as if
wow.
to laugh at me. Beavers in the middle of the Colorado River, or on the edge of the middle of the Colorado River. But that was kind of funny. I've never seen beavers before, and that was it.
I sort of have to wonder, what are they chewing and eating if, in the middle of a desert, there are not too many large trees for them to chew on?
I couldn't answer the question, and that was absolutely the question that hit me first. What the hell are they eating down here? And I don't know. Maybe they were hanging around for scraps from the kitchen. Who knows? Anyway, all right. Well, we're going to talk about with Dr. Bruce Cornett tonight is anti-gravity and some other things as well. This is pretty heady stuff. I don't know what we're going to hear. I'll be like all of you listening. I'm looking forward to it. Bruce is always fascinating and a wonderful explainer of the fascinating material he works with. So, Bruce, give us a thumbnail sketch, and then we'll jump in.
Okay. Basically, but a lot of speculation and attempts to understand what is going on in these UAP or unidentified aerial phenomena that appear to defy gravity. And we've had decades and decades of sightings and indications that whatever these things are, they do not obey our typical, Newtonian physics. And they can do things that our conventional aircraft simply cannot do.
Correct.
And it is only recently that some of the knowledge about the composition of the hulls of these craft has leaked out into the scientific public. And that is mainly through material that crashed and the government got a hold of it. And sometimes other ufologists went in and to certain areas and were able to secure some pieces of the metal hulls of these ships. And that information then would leak out to the public. And so the concept that these hulls were constructed very differently from anything that we would normally associate with a hull or of an aircraft, they are honeycombed in structure, and certain terms have come about more recently in the vocabulary of physicists called metamaterials and quasicrystals. And what they're discovering is that the intricate layering and structures within these hulls is very much part of the reason why they can defy gravity. And so there's been a lot of attempts to replicate these metamaterials, and there's still a lot of effort going on, and most of it is secret in the government. They're not letting information out, but a lot of people are now wondering whether or not what is the characteristic feature of this material that is there anything that happens because this material can create a negative gravity environment or force field? And the answer is yes, and that seems to have come about through my work in the Pine Bush area when I spent 11 years there documenting the phenomenon. And it came to me, and the pilots brought their ships out and put on performances for my cameras, and I was able to capture their lights doing all sorts of strange maneuvers in the night sky.
Oh, Bruce, you have shared so many wonderful pictures and beautifully delineated drawings of these events that I think a lot of people remember them. Yes, I should also mention that you said something earlier that a lot of people hear and they understand that these craft are doing things that our physics doesn't allow. Well, the other side of that coin is that a lot of people would like to say, well, they're doing things that the human body doesn't allow, right? Unless they've got some miraculous discovery of anti-gravity inside, the body would just be crushed to a pulp in a second. So this is another thing.
And the concept that has been developed, especially out of these TikToks that have been recorded and videotaped by pilots, Navy pilots, right. is mm-hmm. that there's the only way these craft can make such maneuvers and accelerate so fast and make right angle turns is if the environment inside that craft has no relationship to the environment outside. In other words, it's totally isolated, insulated from everything outside, and it's the hull of the ship, much like the cell wall of a living cell, that protects everything inside and it keeps it from experiencing the changes in momentum and acceleration that we visually see the craft do from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the pilot doesn't feel anything when he causes his ship to accelerate to tens of thousands of miles per hour in a fraction of a second. And whereas a conventional airframe, if it were able to do that, the pilot would have become a grease spot on the bulkhead of the ship.
Right. You mentioned something earlier about the actual ship structure. Would you go back over that again, that it appears to be made of unusual configurations of some kind of metal? Give me a little bit of detail.
Right. Well, the pieces that I've seen published on this show a beehive type of honeycomb sandwiched between very thin layers of alternating elements, anywhere from graphene to other types of metals, and that are mixed with what they call quasi crystals. These are not your normal crystals, where the elements within the crystal vary considerably, and it's not a uniform type. For example, a quartz crystal is composed of silicon and oxygen. Well, these quasi-crystals are composed of many different types of elements. And what seems to be happening is that they confound the normal force fields that are created by our world. In other words, they isolate and insulate the ship and what's inside it from everything that's comprises our dimension, our physics.
I think that, without any doubt, without any even hesitation, this is far beyond human physics. This is not physics 101 or physics 901. It doesn't matter. This is really eclectic stuff.
And what is also apparent is that because the ship appears to be immune from the effects of our world, I mean, when you have one of these Tic Tacs being able to travel underwater at over 400 miles an hour, I mean, that is inconceivable. I've had one of these craft buzz our helicopter over the Wallkill River Valley, and the pilot had to tell me exactly when to push the button on my camera to capture him flying by, he had to know exactly when he would be right in front of my camera lens and to instruct me to do that. And he was able to do that. And one of the pictures I got of his craft, it was a tetrahedral-shaped craft outlined by these brilliant plasma lights. And it, I was able to estimate its size from the distance it was away in front of the helicopter, and it was traveling over 3,000 miles an hour. I mean, that is, you know, close to right. Mach 4 or Mach 5. And it made no sound, no sonic boom or anything. It just was a flash of light in front of the helicopter. Now, we don't have conventional aircraft jets that can fly that fast, that low in the atmosphere. They usually have to go way up, you know, many tens of miles into the, above the Earth where the atmosphere is very thin, to be able to travel that fast. Right. And, but there's another aspect of this. These craft appear to be able to transition into or create artificially a separate dimension or environment that they can just pop into and pop out of. And we're getting into the point right now where we're seeing all sorts of paranormal things that people have observed that involve ghosts, that involve Bigfoot, etc., just seemingly appearing and disappearing. And the question is, where do they go? You know, Ellen Crystal has seen this happen. I've seen it happen. These ships just simply vanish. And many descriptions of this, of these ships will appear before some witnesses, put on a show, and then just as quickly disappear as they appeared. And where
well,
are they
well,
going?
Bruce, what is the possibility, what is the potential for these craft to shift into some kind of alternate vibration frequency where they appear to be invisible? They're still there in our dimension and our time, but they're just vibrating in such a way that we can't register something optically on them. Is that a possible?
Absolutely. I mean, I have actually, I have a webpage out there called the Mystery C5, C5's galaxy, huge military cargo plane. And I witnessed one coming into Stewart Airport back in 1993. And I didn't realize when I was photographing it at the end of the airstrip, I was outside of the airport, and I saw the C-5 coming in. I'd seen it earlier that day flying around over a place where a UAP had disappeared the night before, and my friends and I had witnessed it and photographed it coming in and disappearing into a farm field. And then the next day I went out there with my magnetometer, and I was checking to see if there's any unusual magnetic radiation, and I found it. But then I noticed that the C-5 was circling me above. What the heck is a C-5 doing? You know, even though the Stewart Airport was a training base for C-5 pilots, what was one doing just circling above
Correct.
Me?
Yeah.
And I went to the airport to want to get pictures of aircraft coming in and landing, because it's an international airport also. And at dusk, where the pilots would turn on their navigation lights, and I would be able to see what different types of patterns of navigation lights were associated with which type of airframes in a conventional aircraft. And here comes the C-5, and that I had seen before. And as it came in lower and lower, approaching the runway, I was taking a series of photographs, and all of a sudden it disappeared. It just disappeared. I said, what the heck? And so instinctively I said, no, it can't disappear. So I moved my camera to take the next photograph in sequence, and then it started to reappear, and I took another picture, and it reappeared again, but it was all black and had these funny vibrations around it. And then in the next picture, as it came down and landed, it transitioned into a normal C-5, you know, with with great camouflage.
Oh, yeah, fascinating.
And what was fascinating about this is that as it landed very fast. Now, most C-5s I've seen coming in on films and videos of these planes landing, okay, it takes a fair distance of runway for such a large jet to come to a stop, right?
You bet, yeah.
Well, in three frames of three separate motions of my camera, that C-5 came to a complete stop. I mean, less than 1,000 feet.
Doesn't sound possible.
When I got the photographs back, I found out what was going on, and it was shocking. Well, as the pilot was landing, he saw me taking photographs. And he radioed ahead that there's somebody out there taking photographs, and apparently he was putting on a demonstration for somebody at the airport, at Stewart Air Force Base.
He was showing off.
All of a sudden, the lights started flashing down at the end of the other end of the runway, and an MP Jeep comes screaming out along the access road to the runway, and it stops opposite me on the other side of the fence, and gets out. The two MPs get out and with their binoculars to look at me, and then they turn around and go back. Well, I thought this was rather weird. And next thing that happened was a state trooper pulled up at the bottom of the hill, and he gets out and climbs up, and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm photographing airplanes landing at the airport." "You can't do that. You don't have permission to do that." I said, "What?" You know, and he says, "You have to go get permission before you can do that." Well, what he was sent to do is to get my identification, which he did. And
sure.
So I said, "Okay, I'll go over to the control tower, and I'll ask permission," which I did. And the head of the FAA for the airport was coming down the stairs in a change of shift. And I asked him, I introduced myself and told him what happened. And he said, "You can take as many pictures as you want. Go out the door, turn around, and knock yourself out." So I thought that was very strange. And then I got the prints back, and it actually shows the C-5 disappearing and then reappearing. So what happened?
Well,
to
you
ask
know,
the
Bruce, hold that thought. I've got to take a break. But knowing you as long as I have, and I think many of you who have been following Bruce's extremely well-documented work, what he's telling us is exactly what he experienced. He doesn't mince words. He doesn't exaggerate. And this is another. You are a magnet for unusual things, my friend. You always have been. That's why.
Yeah,
all right, hold
so.
On a minute. Dr. Bruce Cornett and I will be right back with you. Much more ahead tonight, so sit tight and buckle up. And we're back with Dr. Bruce Cornett, who is in Laughlin, Nevada. Strange change for you, isn't it, looking out the scenery of Laughlin rather than New York?
Oh, yes, big change. You know,
yeah.
The one thing I like about the West is that there's very little vegetation in it. As a geologist, I get to see all of the rock formations without having to speculate as to what the rocks are doing below tree cover and grass and all of that. So it's a delight as a geologist to
well,
be
good
out
for
here.
You. I can't, honestly, I worked in Las Vegas for almost 3 years. I didn't like the desert. I like trees. I'm one of those green people. But anyway, good.
I
That's
like
an
trees
interesting
too.
Way to see it.
Right. And
okay.
Anyway, my previous discussion, I was trying to present an example of what we are, as a government, are capable of doing. In other words, apparently we have, and now you're getting information coming out all over the place from Japan, from Korea, et cetera, about these invisibility cloaks. or these this material that can cause something to be invisible, can bend light around an object. And so that example of the C5 is an early example of just how early this technology may have been developed and what it's capable of doing. So, and I've seen that things that on demonstration that are indicate that we are really moving ahead on this metamaterial concept, because that fabric that bends light is similar in composition to the metamaterial of the hulls of these craft that are anti-gravity. So a lot of things are being developed right now that are going to change everything. I mean, I never would have thought 30 years ago that with my cameras, because I'm a camera bug, and I love large cameras with large telephoto lenses. But those cameras, are huge compared to what you now have in your cell phone. In the little tiny dot that represents the camera on your cell phone, that technology can capture images that can almost be as good as the bigger cameras could capture. So we are getting to a point of miniaturization that beyond most people's understanding. I mean, it's a magic box. This cell phone that you're holding.
I don't understand it. I totally agree. I can't understand it at all. I don't even have a smartphone. That's how much I don't understand, Bruce, I tell you.
Yes, exactly. It's remarkable what those in the Silicon Valley are developing and coming up with this today. But the transition into being able to make something invisible versus being able to create a separate environment. For one of the things that I've been aware of is that when these ships that I was witnessing and photographing were flying around at night, you couldn't always see the outline of the ship itself, okay? It looked like they were just lights independent of one another moving through the air. And I realized that if that the pilot had been able to move that ship through, as you said, a change of frequency into another parallel dimension, the lights might still shine through. In other words, if it was right on the other side, you would still see the lights, but you wouldn't see the physical ship. So,
Bruce, let me ask you a question. Maybe I'm really old-fashioned, and I just don't have the science fiction parameters to look at this situation as it's multi-dimensional. I can accept the concept. I get that. But when I mentioned that a ship might change its vibrational nature so we couldn't see it, I wasn't even thinking about stepping into the first, like pages in a book, into the next dimension over. I was thinking of in this dimension. And whenever we take people into this multi-dimensional venue, we run the risk of kind of losing some of them. Could this not happen in our own single dimension? Sure it could.
I think it has. And in fact, I've experienced having a portal open up right in front of me and seeing and looking into another world through that portal. And whoever was controlling that environment had the capability of opening a hole in our world that interfaces with another world on the other side. And I mean, there have been many cases of people who are Bigfoot researchers of hearing stories of watching a Bigfoot, seeing one, and then just walks right into a portal and disappears.
Yes.
And or coming out of a portal. And there was this one story. My girlfriend Sharon is writing books now, 3 volumes on Bigfoot what people think of Bigfoot. And one of the stories that she is writing about is the story of a Bigfoot researcher by the name of Larry. Unfortunately, he's passed away. And he was walking along a mountain ridge in a forest, And he took only three steps. He didn't know, he see the portal in front of him. Mm-hmm. The first step he took as he was going into this portal that he didn't see, everything became quiet. There was no sound whatsoever. The next step, everything became black. And he, you know, I mean, that's pretty amazing. You're walking in daylight, and suddenly everything goes black. He sure. takes a third step, and he's in a jungle at night. And this hand comes down on his right shoulder. He could see it was hairy hand with fingernails on it. And he heard this voice in his head saying, "Gotcha." He immediately, instinctively reversed his steps and walked back out of that portal into our world. But the importance of that story is that the separation from our world and other worlds may be razor thin.
And that would explain a lot of things, wouldn't it? Ghosts, all kinds of paranormal object moving, weird things that are seen that shouldn't be seen. Yeah, of course. Bleed through, right?
Right, exactly. Bleed through. That's a perfect way of thinking of it. But isn't this part of our awakening to what is really going on and being able to accept other worlds around us that are there right now? They're doing their own thing right in our same space, and we just can't see them.
Mm-hmm. And, well, there have been a lot of stories over the decades of my life that would suggest something just like that. So, yeah, I don't rule anything out.
But our technology, what I'm getting at is our technology is getting so sophisticated that ghost hunters are now using EMF recorders or devices, and as well as very low frequency voices to be able to pick up conversations with spiritual entities and to be able to detect them and even get their outlines. And so we're getting to a point right now where we will eventually, I think, have the ability to turn on a camera that is capable of seeing these other worlds right in our own presence.
Well, you know, this also, a lot of these things are kind of shoulder to shoulder when you think about EVP, right?
Right.
All right. This is
electronic voice phenomenon.
EVP has always been one of the most fascinating things I've ever heard. And that's just for you out there who don't know. A lot of researchers used to do this. It seems to have kind of fallen away lately. But they would basically just take a tape recorder, a little cassette recorder or a digital recorder, put it in a location, a haunted location or a graveyard or an old building, turn it on and let it run for an hour, then come back and go back and listen to what's on the tape. And there would be many times that, and we used to have programs like this right here often. You can hear them in the archives, where perfectly audible, clear voices would be heard, more than one person. Now, are these ghosts or are they bleed through from the next step, coming back? Don't know, but EVP has always just amazed me. Go ahead, Bruce.
And in going back to our original, conversations about what's so exciting in the world of anti-gravity is that one of the things I detected when I was recording the performances by these anomalous craft for my I recorded visual time exposures and video and audio. I noticed that the audio was different. There was something strange about the audio. And it seemed to defy Doppler effect. And I'm sure that most people that in the audience know what Doppler is. We see it every day when you look at the weather station of how they're able to detect the whether or not a tornado or a rainstorm is coming in the direction of the Doppler radar, and that usually means that. As a sound source approaches a microphone or observer, the frequency will appear to rise because the distance between the source of the sound and the person is decreasing. And then when the sound source moves away, the frequency appears to descend or decrease. And this is a characteristic thing that we've all heard of horns passing us and the frequency rising and then dropping. Well, what I noticed with all of the sounds that were made, and these appear, Alan Kristol was saying that all these sounds are artificial. And I believe, and I've documented that very clearly, that they are artificial. But they all defied Doppler. And I developed the term reverse Doppler. And this is where the sound will continuously, frequency will continue to decrease as a sound source of these craft is approaching my microphone, and then reverse and increase in frequency as the sound source moved away. When I did a frequency spectrogram of these, I got something very different from that of what I get when I recorded the sounds of conventional jet aircraft. And whereas with jet aircraft, the sounds tend to blend between the different low and high frequencies. But in these spectrograms of these sounds coming from these craft, they were always divided up into as many as 10 to 12 separate parallel frequencies. And the only way we can do that today in our modern day world is with music synthesizers, that where every sound is controlled separately. And all of these frequencies decreased on approach to the microphone and increased as the sound source moved away. Not only that, but the frequencies compressed were closer to one another over the microphone and then expanded as the sound source moved away. And there was no white noise. All mechanical machine-operated jet engines produce all sorts of very high-pitched white noise. Well, you don't see any with the sound coming from these craft. Well, now, what is fascinating, Jeff, is that Dr. Jack Sefardi in California, he has recognized that this is the what happens to sound when it is coming out of a UAP, then passing through the hull, this metaphysical hull, that they've, through experimentation in the laboratory, they've been able to replicate some of these metamaterials and found out that they cause a reversal in refraction. An inverse refraction, as well as a reversal of sound. So that these frequency, these reverse Doppler has become a smoking gun for detecting anti-gravity craft. If the craft produces a sound, okay, it can fly silently, but if it produces a sound, that sound will be reversed from what we normally expect. Mm-hmm. And that is like the hallmark of an anti-gravity ship. And so we have now we gotten to the point where it's no longer speculation. Oh, you see something zipping around in the sky. Well, it has to have defy gravity. Well, now we have something that is associated with it and the kind of material that causes this to happen. So we're getting very close to understanding, and once we understand, we'll be able to replicate what is going on. And I think that's very exciting.
So you think that's within reach then? Interesting.
I think it's already been reached, to be quite honest. I think, you know, anything we see coming out of the military that they
it's all hand-me-downs, I know.
Yeah, decades. It's already been in production.
Yeah.
Long before the public sees it.
For those of you new to this, if the military says, or the military-industrial complex says, one day we hope to be able to, in most cases, that means we've already done it, but we can't tell you about it, so here's a teaser.
Right. Exactly. And that's essentially what is happening within the theoretical physics and the discussions that are happening, where it's the recognition, the acknowledgement that this stuff really exists. And I think there's been a cognitive dissonance among scientists for a long time that this is even possible. You know, and that's one reason why most mainstream scientists have not wanted to deal with the subject of UFOs.
They don't want to.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, you mentioned theoretical physics. I would think that if I were a theoretical and honest, open-minded theoretical physicist after the truth, I would never be living in a time, a more exciting and challenging time than that which we are experiencing right now, for reasons you've already mentioned. But theoretical physics seems to be wanting to go where traditional physics says you can't go. But, of course, we can go there.
And right. Must. And must. And I think one of my reasons for all of this happening to me is that I'm willing to share this with the public so that the public can be brought forward with these amazing discoveries. I mean, look what happened when the cell phone was invented. Oh, my God. Now, I mean, there are jokes out there showing people all looking down at their cell phones, and people don't look up anymore. They'll look at each other. They want to see each other in on the screen of the cell phone rather than in a
And you know what? You know what? They'd often rather not see each other. They just rather see the text messages. They don't. There seems to be an aversion and a growing disenchantment with the idea of eye contact. They're safer for them just to look at the text rather than have to look at the person in the eyes. I watch people. They don't look at each other in the eyes often anymore. They just look at those damn screens.
But there's something troubling about this, is because biologically, we have evolved to react to body language and to voice contact and eye contact.
Yes, sir.
And how is this going to interfere with our ability to understand
this
world around?
It's going to cripple it. And the reality that the people are going to find themselves living in will be self-defined on the digital spectrum. It will no longer be a 3D experiential, hormonal, intellectual reaction to someone else's face, body language, as you're saying, gestures. These people will live in a digital venue, and they'll have to define what the other person is thinking, looking, or acting about on the basis of the text in front of them. Think about it. You're right. The controllers, with their smartphone milieu, are removing from humanity the human contact, and that is that involves most definitely eye contact. You're right.
There's something huge going on here, and it could have very negative consequences.
I couldn't agree more. It can't be positive. It just can't be. It's taking these people away from reality.
And when you add into that artificial intelligence, oh, my God.
Oh, well, goodbye.
You might as well get rid of humans. You know, we don't need them.
That may be coming sooner than we think.
Also, the one thing that has amazed me, and I know how it works. I mean, I've taken many courses in computer programming. But to have the smartphone with a voice, when you want to find a place, I mean, you go to Google Maps, and then you find the place, and you say, okay, how do I get there? And you push, your route, and it maps out a route for you. And then you push to have the voice give you every turn that you need to take. So you're driving along, and there's usually a female voice will tell you, in so many feet, you will turn left. And then so many other feet, you'll turn right. And you're listening to this, and of course it's because of global positioning system, and that little blue dot on your screen that the computer in your cell phone knows where you are and what type of message to give you next. I mean, here we are listening to a computer tell us where to go.
I know, it's true. We put our hands and our lives into what resides in supercomputers, and AI is making advances every moment. And tune in, if we're around for another 3 or 5 years, it's going to be unrecognizable what we're living in. A whole different world. AI will be the dominant form of intelligence on the planet. We will no longer be the number one sentient species. We'll be reduced to number two. No question. Not in my mind.
I tend to agree with you. And more importantly, that everything will be, you know, computerized for us. Whatever we're doing in our privacy will totally disappear. I mean,
we won't have to apply ourselves anymore. It will not be a proactive existence. We will simply be taken care of and given things to react to. That's about it.
Right. It's almost as if the political environment, you know, is preparing us for a socialistic existence where a government or a computer controls everything.
I think we're damn near there now. Yes, of course. I agree. Totally. Okay. Now, when you're at these conferences, do people... I've been told by people forever. Stan Friedman told me this in 1994. He said, in many ways, the most fun aspect of these conferences is after the presentation, when people come up to you. They often tell you some amazing things. I assume you've experienced that before.
Yes, I have. Yeah, and indeed, they've been amazing stories that I've heard. And there are people who just have to find somebody, want to tell somebody about them. And in part of my situation is realizing who they are and you know, what can I do to satisfy that individual, let them know that, yes, I am listening. I'm hearing you, and what you're telling me is absolutely amazing. And but I also recognize that this individual is having trouble accepting what has happened, right? And
yeah.
He wants somebody to confirm for his own well-being that this really did occur.
Yeah.
And by listening to him and being amazed by what he's telling you, Then you've accomplished something important on a human basis, which, you know, the cell phone destroys. You're talking to an individual who is relating to you in real time, their experience with body, with aspects of their physical being. And this is something that you can't get from a screen on a cell phone.
No, but what are they doing to fill the gap? Latex male and female companions, or whatever they're made out of. The Japanese now are complaining that there are fewer marriages now because of these sex partners you can buy. Apparently for both sexes. I don't know, but there's so much happening and being just dumped on people. I don't honestly understand how they can survive much longer. As what we grew up with, Bruce, is gone. Sorry to say it. It's just gone. Hold on a minute. We have the top of the break here coming up. I'll be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Bruce Cornett in Laughlin, Nevada, after this.
Okay, here we are back, and welcome back. Hour number two tonight. Another half an hour to go with Dr. Bruce Cornett, then Henry Nyman will join us. A deluge of information today on the coronavirus. We're going to bring you fully up to date in just a little bit on that. You can find all of it in headlines at rents.com. Our alternate portal is altnews.net, so you can go either way and take a look. We're going to have it all up there momentarily. Meantime, Bruce, let me ask you this. With all of that tic-tac noise, chatter, and Luis Elizondo, who seems to have a bit of a checkered reputation at this point, what do you think's going on? And if this was some kind of an exposure thing, why would the Navy go all the way back to, what was it, 2003 or something, to bring forth a video when we know they've got warehouses full of digital and old reel, they got film, they've got everything. What do you think's up here, really? And how do you read Elizondo's pedigree? And if he's listening, Luis, I don't know. I've been trying to get you on the program before, but you're busy. I get it. So, Bruce, tell us what your thoughts are.
I've been impressed by Elizondo's demeanor, the way he handles himself, and with the knowledge that he has. And he's
His demeanor. Let me say one thing. I like his demeanor, too. And yet there are some people who have taken maybe cheap shots at him. So go ahead.
Yes, and he's been very well educated and conditioned for this position. I don't think where he is right now is an accident at all. I think it's part of a program to educate the public, to desensitize the public to the idea that we are not alone. And
Bruce, here's just a little fun aside. Excuse the interruption, but hasn't the government been doing that since the 1950s, when they brought out all of those sci-fi movies? Wasn't that the goal then? We've been desensitized now for 70 years. It's time. We're ready.
Yeah, but there's a problem. There's a problem with this. If you do surveys of how many people believe in UFOs, I mean, you get a large percentage, okay? But how many people think that ET is right here on Earth? Okay, that non-humans walk among us. No.
But you know what? If the media were told to tell people that that was going on, within a matter of weeks, the great majority of the sheep would say, yeah, they're here. We can't. They could be right over there standing by that coat rack. I don't know. They would accept it. That's what they're told. They do what they're told. That's the one lesson I think that the controllers have learned long ago. Pavlov's dogs. So I think if they simply change the narrative and stop playing this stupid-ass cover-up, excuse my street lingo, people would step right up to the plate and have no problem with it. That's just me talking.
Something very interesting is happening. I see things developing, and it's almost like a pot that's on the stove, and the heat is rising, and you can see the movement of the water in the pot, and small bubbles are starting to form at the bottom of the pot, and you know that eventually it's going to erupt into a huge boil.
Yeah.
Okay,
those are not bubbles. Those are little flying saucers. If you look closely,
yes. But the important thing here is that there's something else that's even more important to those who are in the government, who are in control of all this. I sent you an interesting commentary by Amy, who is in this group, email group, that involves all of these theoretical physicists, and an amazing group of people that are up to date. I mean, even Deepak Chopra is on this list, and sometimes it gets involved. But, you know, you're dealing with what is consciousness? What is can there be a consciousness without a brain? Okay? I mean, we're at a frontier of understanding that maybe the whole universe is
consciousness. I think Donald Trump proved that, didn't he? Sorry.
All right. But there's also... the problem that in competition between nations, we're seeing the major superpowers at a position right now of wanting to one-up each other. And yet, and this is going to continue. I mean, with the Chinese landers on the moon and things of this nature, I mean, this is quite extraordinary when you think about it. It only was after they started putting landers on the far side of the moon that the NASA has really started to open up. And the big question that Amy said in that email I sent you was that whoever gets this technology of controlling anti-gravity and being able to create what we call artificial reproduction vehicles representing what they have in a crash craft is going to be able to dominate the world. And there's this big fear of who's going to get ahead. Are the Russians going to beat the Americans, or are the Chinese going to beat the Americans? So there is a concern as to how much of what is really going on behind the scenes leaks out. I mean, and I've heard all sorts of stories, and the stories that I've told you on your show, there's clearly some sort of a relationship between the ships that I photographed over the Wallkill River Valley of New York and the involvement of the military. Just think about this. What I was able to document with a 24 square mile magnetic survey was an enormous underground alien base. Okay? And it's right next to the Stewart Air Force and Army base. And it is quite clear that the military is aware of what's going on, but they are in denial about what's going on as well. I mean, at my talk at Albuquerque last year in August, a member of my audience, when I was telling them about the audience about all of these things that were happening on the west side of Wallkill Valley, whereas on the east side you had the military dominating, he said, "Well, I worked at Stewart Airport in the late 80s and early 90s, and I never heard anything about these craft that are flying around. And yet, it was Ellen Crystal who was doing her work in the 80s that resulted in her book, 1991 book called Silent Invasion, that shows that this activity was very active on the west side of the valley. And I have talked to people, Jeff. One person invited me to his house at Saul Point, New York, east of the Hudson River, and he took me out in the field because he said, strange things have been happening around my parents' house. And I've been seeing all these craft that you're describing on your web pages. And he took me into the field, and sure enough, we had a performance put on by the Manta Ray that is going to be, I'm going to be showing videos of that at the conference on Monday. And and he said he's seen hatch doors open up in the middle of horse fields, a person climb out and then close the hatch and walk away. What is a underground tunnel doing in the middle underneath a horse field? And he said he's seen these cargo trucks, 18 wheels, go down these narrow private roads into this valley where there's nothing down there, and they just disappear.
Gotcha. Yeah. There's clearly a vast underground operation going on in this country, manned by man and manned by some of those others, working together, I'm sure, in many cases. Yeah.
You couldn't have said it better. That's what I was getting at, driving at. There is a relationship going on, and this is what those in control of a disclosure are concerned about, is how will people react to finding out that our human government, the people in government, aren't the ones who are really in control.
I think they should be more concerned with how they will react to finding out that they've been lied to viciously, maliciously, malevolently since the 1950s and before that. I would be furious. I think that the controllers may be worried about losing all authentication in terms of a legitimate control mechanism. If they've been lying to people that long, I think the people would tell them to go to hell. That's just one of the possibilities.
Well, I agree, because it's becoming more and more obvious, And it's just been obvious all along, but, you know, just being openly aware of it, is that humans cannot distinguish between truth and a lie.
There you go.
We don't have any way of doing it except through scientific evidence. And that only then it does it become a theory. And a theory is never proof. It is just a very strong possibility that something exists or is happening, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's as close to the truth as we can get. Just look at all of the different interpretations of Scripture in the various religions. How many people see so many different things in just a collection of words? So one has to wonder, is what is happening or predicted to happen in prophecy going to actually happen? I mean, one of the things I've been made aware of is through my personal experiences, and I've shared some of these on your show. And my second talk at this mega conference on Thursday is entitled Anatomy of an ET Spiritual Deception of Biblical Magnitude. Huh. And it's about how this whole story is going to unfold and where we're going to be in probably no more than 20 or 30 years from now. It's, will there be a Messiah? Will he return? Or perhaps, as I conclude in my talk, maybe he is already returned. Maybe he is walking among us,
right,
and we don't realize it. And he's learning about us and preparing to for an official disclosure. And isn't that sort of on a parallel with the technological disclosure that we've been talking about? I mean,
sure.
I don't know. I don't know how people are going
to follow,
react.
I follow exactly what you're saying. I honestly, the way people around the world have been taken away from conscious reality, seeing the world around them, reacting to the world around them, the five senses, right? Taste, smell, sight, feel, hearing. That's being taken away from them. They're now being moved into a state of almost vulgar utilitarianism. They're being put on the shelf. I don't think the controllers have anything to worry about. I don't see people getting up off their asses and doing anything except give me the ball. The ball game's on? Great. You know, you can turn the cable on and never stop watching football, basketball, baseball, golf. I don't care what it is. There's always a diversion. These are drugs. They're hypnotic drugs.
It's called an adult pacifier. We give pacifiers to babies.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Why not have an adult pacifier?
Of course it is. It's a drug. It's an addictive drug. And I just don't think that concern, oh my God, what are the people going to do? What if they rise up and declare the government null and void in terms of its power? It's not going to happen. I don't think people care anymore. They're so stressed out, full of anxiety, debt. The average American household is $24,000 in debt. One third of American workers don't earn enough to survive. Think about all these things. And yet people are desperate for the drug of diversion. Take me away from this agony. They fall into a trance, staring at the ball game, staring at their screens, whatever. So no, I don't, I think maybe 50 years ago, there might have been a chance that people would have, when they were still active, might have gotten up and said, well, wait a minute, you've been lying to us. Who the hell are you? Why should we have a government like this when there's a higher power? It's right here. But I don't rule anything out. I personally believe that ET has been on this planet for maybe billions of years. It's 4.5 billion years old. We have arisen and been destroyed ourselves countless times over these billion. Let's just take 2 billion years. How long what's our recorded history here? 10,000 years? It's a joke.
Right.
It's a joke. So to think that, oh my gosh, an ET is going to come here is ludicrous on its face when you really honestly consider it. They've been here forever. They may well have created this particular species. If you look at the DNA, the double helix, it's a damn machine. It's plug-in modules. It's not
exactly.
Some quirk of nature. We are machines. We're electric machines. Anyway, that's just me rambling, so go ahead.
Oh, no, that's good. Because, you know, with the concept of panspermia, which was even proposed by the scientist who discovered the DNA molecule discovery.
Right.
And why do we think that we are unique? You know, the whole aspect of the Middle Ages was to put humans at the center of the universe and say that we're the only ones and that
right.
we are God's perfect creation.
Yeah.
But
terrible
now we're
arrogance.
Realizing, yeah, now we're realizing that there's just so much out there that we don't know.
Thank goodness we
yes.
have that awareness. Thank goodness. How boring it would be if we really did know it all. No thanks. Not for me.
Yeah, and what is going to happen to us individually, you know, upon death? I think we're getting close to understanding what is possible. And that is an amazing situation that, to me, it says that there is much more going on around us. As Shakespeare said, we are all but actors on a stage. And somebody, that would imply that there's somebody, you know, writing the script and somebody, controlling the script and producing the script. And so who are they?
You know?
And so
yeah.
there has to be more than just us that's going on here.
Oh, what a horrible thing it would be if that weren't true. It is true. Of course, there's a lot more than us. What is the latest projection on how many regular ETs are here? That it's at least half a dozen, I think.
I know that I've heard the values of around 70, 75, and even higher than that.
Yeah,
that we've been documented. I mean, personally, I have met and encountered three different types. So that, to me, you know, that's. It's a given. If there are three different types, there could be 300 different types. And where are they coming from? Well, many of them are coming from parallel dimensions. Others might actually come across, be able to jump between stars.
Why not? Sure.
Why not? So there could be all sorts of things that are going on. And what is fascinating as a scientist who has studied biology and evolution, I recognize that, a lot of other planets might go through the same similar phases that we have of life starting out as single cells, and then you develop worm-like creatures, and then fish-like creatures, and then amphibians, and then reptiles, and going into mammals and other types of mammal-like reptiles, and that eventually you have intelligent life forms. Why not? Why couldn't that be possible on multiple planets? But here's the rub. How would the DNA look similar? Could you combine the DNA from a hominid that evolved on another planet and hominids that evolved on this planet? Would their DNA be close enough, similar enough, that it would be compatible?
Interesting question.
What would that imply if it were?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's mind-boggling that for people to say that we were planted here from another planet or world, and that the watchers, some of the watchers came down to Earth and they found women desirable, and they took those women as wives and they had children with them. Okay? Well, what do you think this is talking about? And yet we have the evolutionists, the Darwinists, if you will, saying that no, humans only evolved on this planet and nothing more. And that we're also hearing a lot of conversation about hybrids between ETs and humans. And one of the things that I've been in discussion with about is that, well, what constitutes a hybrid? Is it only somebody that who's had their DNA modified slightly, or is it sort of like two different beings producing an offspring where that offspring is looks half like the father and half like the mother? And what I think is the problem is that we forget that the chimpanzee is their DNA is 98% similar to ours. 98%.
Right.
Okay? So why are we not calling chimpanzees human? I mean, literally, if all it takes is a 1% or 2% difference in DNA...
If you've been listening to this program...
Right. Where is Grim Greta Thunberg when we need her, right? She could branch out from her climate lunacy to try to give chimps human status, right? Well, you know, you raise a good issue, and it's an important point. Where do we draw the line? It seems like right there. And we mentioned females and interplanetary jumps. How, you know about Maria Orsic and the Vril Society and the German flying saucer program, the first one. The SS had their own later on. Maria Orsic,
right.
O-R-S-I-C. Look up Maria Orsic, friends, if you don't know about Maria. And at the end of the war, it was alleged that a note was left by Maria Orsic and her other women who were behind the construction of these flying saucers saying that they were leaving and goodbye and basically good luck. And they went back to Aldebaran, the star, and the planet that was there from which they came. Or at least they thought they came. But there's just fascinating things going on all around us all the time that are kept away from us. And the keepers don't have to work so hard to keep it away from us anymore. We're pretty well self-trained now to keep our noses in the sand and not look around. It's silly. Bruce, thank you for being here.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
It was fun. It was fun.
Yes.
You have a great presentation. Yes, we do. Have a wonderful time there. Look for some beavers and say hello for me if you see any.
Oh, my God. That's quite a story. Yes. You know, somebody has to be feeding the beavers, right?
I think so. I do.
Okay.
All right. Be well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. Okay, Dr. Bruce Cornett and, yes, Maria Orsic. That's a very interesting story for those of you who may not know. O-R-S-I-C. Back with more, lots more, with Dr. Henry Nyman next.